Hello and welcome to the Blue Cup Tools podcast. This isn't your mama's AGS podcast. This is something new. This is myself, Grundislav, aka Francisco Gonzalez, and my co-host.
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as 304.
And we're here to talk about issues in the AGS community, as well as give some insightful tips about our...
Very insightful tips.
Yes, about our game-making processes and our quote-unquote wisdom. But we don't have that much wisdom, do we?
I think you have wisdom. You've been making AGS games since forever.
Well, I don't know about forever, but you've been making AGS games since you came out of the womb, so...
I'm not that young, Francisco. Oh.
Right, of course. Well, I'm just saying you've made a lot of games. Yes.
Thanks. So have you.
Yes. Anyway, so what are we going to talk about today, Ben Chandler?
I think we should talk about animation, seeing as we decided this several days ago.
Oh yeah, they're talking about animation!
So, animation. What kind of... Well, obviously...
Yes, animation.
Yes, we both make games. We both have animations in our games.
Absolutely. For the sort of adventures we make, we're not making first-person adventures. For the third person, it's absolutely essential to have decent animations if you want to immerse people in the game, I think.
Exactly. Now, do you think a game should be defined by its animations, or rather its number of animations?
I don't think it should be... Well, certainly not number of animations. One good animation can completely outweigh, you know, several... Or, you know, 100 really average ones. I mean, there are animations from classic games that I'll never forget. I always remember in Day of the Tentacle when Laverne puts the tentacle suit on is one of my favorite animations. I think having, whether you're doing drama or comedy, a lot of it is, it's well supported if you have decent animation.
Day of the Tentacle was a very well animated game. I mean, I think they didn't do cell animation and then scale it down, did they? I think they were, I remember when... Yeah, I think when the LucasArts games used to come with the Adventure newsletter, I remember seeing this behind-the-scenes thing of Day of the Tentacle and its animations, and it kind of looked like they had a sprite sheet that they were doing kind of like traditional cell cartoon animation, but I don't really remember. I'd have to look for it, but I probably don't have it anymore. It's been lost to the annals of time.
That would be an interesting thing to dig up, though.
Yeah, it would be. And speaking of digging, there will be that's a good segue for later on, but we'll worry
Absolutely
about
fantastic. Oh dear.
So
yeah, animation.
Yeah, so there's different ways of animating. You like to do the traditional type animation of just doing frame by frame and doing it from imagination. Correct.
Well, I use my own body as reference, but I use what we call keyframes and tween frames. Who does the rotoscope style of animation.
That's right, which is also known as the lazy man's way out, or tracing.
If you look at animation's history, you look at Edward Muybridge. And his influence on even the traditional forms of animation is huge. So the line isn't as clearly defined as this is one way of doing it and this is another way of doing it, because I think they sort of influenced each other to an extent. We don't have any stop motion animators in the podcast, but there's another form.
Yeah, that's true.
And we don't have any 3D animators either. But these are the two that we use. How long have you been doing stop motion animation? Since you first started, or when did you start?
You mean rotoscoping?
That's what I meant.
It's all the same thing. Well, maybe.
It is.
I started doing rotoscoping around Ben Jordan 4 is that I actually started. Okay. But my technique has kind of been evolving as I've been doing it, because when I started doing the Ben Jordan games, I was doing it not so much keyframes. I was just kind of like doing it by the seat of my pants because I'm terrible at animating from imagination. Yeah, so what I started doing was, since I didn't really have access to a video camera or any way of importing, rather, I didn't have a, I had a video camera, but I didn't have any way to import movies into my PC. So what I would do was I would take photos, still photos of myself in different walking frames. So
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so with that, I attempted to do the rotoscoping. And then later on, and what I do now is I have cameras that, you know, can take video. So I do video, and then I import those into a video editing program. And then I go, you know, and export the frames individually. And then, of course, I put them in Photoshop and then scale them down and trace over them. And
basically, do you have a way of ensuring that they stay reasonably the same size, or do you just resize them to a pixel size and hope it all fits?
Well, it's pretty much trial and error. I have an idea of how tall they're going to be because I know which character it is, and all the sprites are generally the same size for all the characters. But if it's an animation, for example, that where they cover a lot of ground, like they have to jump from right to left or something like that, I usually just try and find the animation, the photo or the frame that is the largest, and then kind of work my way with the cropping from there. Like, for instance, let's say that there's an animation where a guy pulls out a gun and he throws it across the screen or something. So obviously his standing frame is going to be his standing frame, and then he's going to pull out and extend his arm out in front of him. So the width of the sprite, the largest width of the sprite, is going to be when he has his arm extended. So whenever there's an animation where there's, like I said, covering an area, I try to find the frame that's going to have the largest width, and then kind of just move that selected area to all the other ones so that it covers the same amount. So like the sprite will move within. Yeah, I'll move with it. So then that way I don't have all sorts of different sized or different width things which will jump all over the place in AGS. And
over the course of the animation, you like to keep the frames all a uniform size, is what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. That is a much more succinct
I did the same thing.
Saying what I was trying. So yeah, tell us a little bit about your animating methods.
I do exactly the same thing as you. I always make sure if I'm doing something which requires the extension of limbs or the moving across a certain range of space, I always like to make sure that I have the biggest frame size set first or the distance covered within the first frame, and then go, I can work within this canvas. And sometimes I need to expand, and in which case I expand all frames. But I have two different styles of animation. The first style is the cycle, and every game is going to need walk cycles and probably talk cycles, unless, you know, some games go without talk cycles. But you're going to need cycles, and cycles I animate differently. With a cycle, it's usually a progressive animation, you know. Even sometimes you've got background animations and stuff like that. You need them to loop seamlessly. So rather than working keyframes, I increment, and I start from frame one, and I adjust a little bit, and I keep going, adjusting frame by frame until I reach a full cycle. And that way you get a nice, smooth... I find if I try to animate cycles with keyframes and then put tween frames in between, it always looks a little bit weird, and it never cycles quite like I want. So I prefer to work like that. But if I'm doing a single action, such as picking up something off the floor or anything like that, I'll usually put keyframes in and then work tween frames between the keyframes, which is basically, if you've never done it before... A keyframe is the starting point and where you want to get to. So, say you want to pick something up, the keyframe to start with would be standing up, and then the keyframe you finish with would be reaching the object on the ground. And so you then create tween frames.
Did you ever play the old Hugo's House of Horror games?
I've never played it, no.
Oh, man. The funniest part of that game, of those games, because it's a series of three games. The second one is like it takes place in like your uncle's mansion or something, and it's like a murder mystery.
The best place. That's the best place for a game to be set.
In your uncle's mansion?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I never liked.
I had an uncle with a mansion, actually.
Yes, I never liked going to his mansion.
Never been to my uncle's mansion. He's sold it now. He's not rich anymore. Poor
you
fella.
Actually had an uncle who had a mansion?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Oh no, I was.
I never went there.
My uncle that never had a mansion.
You're such a liar. You're lying on record. People are going to see you as a dishonest person.
This isn't.
That's quite sad. Well... we'll edit that out.
No, I'll keep it in. All right. I'm sorry, general public. I don't really have an uncle with a mansion. Anyway, the reason I brought this up was because you play as Hugo's girlfriend Penelope, and there's a bit of, I guess you could describe it as a cutscene because it's very primitive, you know, EGA style graphics, early 90s, late 80s stuff.
Cool.
And it was made by just one guy, which, you know, we can get behind. Anyway,
can dig that.
Yeah, so there's a bit at the beginning where she looks through a keyhole and she sees the guy getting stabbed and she faints. And her faint is just, she goes from standing to lying on the ground. And it's the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. Because she just falls.
So she's like, animating keyframes.
She absolutely animating keyframes, yes.
But see, that's how I started animating. If you go back and you play some of my early games, if you play any Android and you watch any Android pick something up, she animates in keyframes. It's a 3-frame animation. She's standing and then she's down picking something up and then she's standing again.
Well, that's true.
That's how I started. And then I thought,
I did the same thing with Ben Jordan. Like in Case 3, I know that there's, when I was starting to actually, or actually no, as early as the original Case 1, I remember where there's like the puzzle where you have to put down the sandwich for the skunk ape, and he just kind of stands, and then he bends, and then he stands up again. But bending
it's a decent way to animate. As long as you're happy to accept people are going to notice it, it's a decent way to animate. You know,
yeah,
if you're starting out making games, you don't want to spend all your effort on animation. You want to get the game made.
Absolutely, and that's a good point. I think that you know you shouldn't concentrate so much on having, because I think that's one of the things that keeps people from you know completing their projects is the over. Walk cycles are a mother, but the over ambition that people find themselves, you know, destroying their projects. One of them, I think, in particular, is excessive animations. And you don't, you know, people will think, you know, my game doesn't have any animations. Oh, it's crappy. But no, it's not. I don't think it's something that's absolutely necessary. It's necessary. I mean, it looks nice, but it's not required. But
I think it's a mark of quality. How much it's not just a mark. It's a mark of effort, but it's also a mark of quality and a mark of experience. You know, experienced animators, you'll see their stuff and you go, "Oh wow, that's good." You can tell straight away from the animation. But I would never let bad animation put me off a game.
Yeah, no. I mean, sometimes it's bad animations are more entertaining than good animations.
I think it's cute when walk cycles slide. I get annoyed when mine slide, but I think it's cute when they slide along the ground. It reminds me of Tupac at the music festival.
I never got around to seeing that actually.
Oh man, it's he's got the AGS floaty feet syndrome. Oh. He's an AGS animated move. It's great. As soon as I saw that, and I'll just say the way to overcome floaty feet, slidey feet, and this is what I do, is I count the pixels between each frame. When I move the foot, I move at 4 pixels, and when I put it into the AGS editor, I make the character move at a speed of 4, and that way your feet don't float unless he's walking on an angle. They never slide.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Usually what I do is, I always set anti-glide mode on, and...
Yes, oh yeah.
And then I usually keep the character's speed relatively low. I mean, I keep it at like I think 5.4 because I'd always have the Y a little bit slower than the X.
Okay.
So
I find any slower walking than a speed of 4 with a delay of 2, I find it annoying to watch a character take so long to cross the screen. So I won't go any slower than that. This is something else that probably needs to be covered when you're talking about long animations. If you remember The Longest Journey.
Yes.
And you remember April Ryan had these incredibly long animations, and you could speed the game up with the fast forward key, but I don't want to be constantly doing that. Keep your animation snappy, you know, unless it's an enormous cutscene.
Yeah.
If you're picking something you don't want to be sitting there for 10 seconds going, oh, yes, that's a cabbage. Oh, I think I'll pick this up. Yes, well, I have a cabbage. Now I'll put it in my pot. You don't need that. It's funny when it's done in Monkey Island. And
yeah, you're pretty much describing full-motion video games now, though.
Exactly, and that's what you want to avoid.
Have I ever told you about my idea for my full-motion video parody game that I want to make?
You never have.
Tell
us.
Oh, man. Well, what I want to do is I want to make a parody full-motion video game in which the entire game is just the character picking things up and examining things. Because in full-motion video games, they wanted to put such an emphasis on the fact that, oh, there's so much more character interaction or whatever, that, like, you have videos of people coming up and examining things and picking them up and looking at them and being like, before they put them away. So I just want to have, you know, where it'll literally take, like, 10 minutes to open a door because the character's just, like, looking at the doorknob and then be like, let me open this door. Oh, look, there's a doorknob. Oh. And then, yeah, so.
Well, that's how I open doors in real life, I have to say.
Oh, okay. I just jump.
I open a door. But you're a manly man. I like to appreciate the handiwork that went into the
door. Not me. I like to destroy handiwork, and I go, I'm in now.
You made Ben Jordan. You're let people accept the fact that you're going to kick their doors in and go, I made Ben Jordan.
That's how I enter every room.
Yeah, well, obviously. And this reminds me of something.
I made Ben Jordan.
What, are you Ben Throttle?
No, I'm Ben Jordan. I made Ben Jordan. No,
I'm Ben Jordan.
No,
there's another type of animation frame which doesn't get mentioned very often, but it is present, and I don't use these enough, but I should. It's what's called the breakdown frame. In between keyframes, you can have a character giving frame, where say you want somebody to pick something up, and this doesn't have to be extended out like it is in the full motion video games, but they can go, oh, there's something there on the ground, and then pick it up. And the old frame between standing and picking up the noticing is that adds character. That's called a breakdown frame.
Ah.
So that's adding adjectives to the nouns sort of thing, or adverbs to the verbs, I guess it would be.
Interesting. I did not know of this existence. But what I was going to say,
yeah,
I really like bend animations and things like that, because they're the easiest to do, because you really only have to do about 3 frames or however many frames, because then you can just loop them backwards, standing back
absolutely
up.
This is what, and when I did Falling Skywards, you notice every time he picks something up and he comes back, he's got that in his hand. It's the exact same animation. I just drew it into those frames in reverse. I just drew the paper or whatever. It's not me putting lots of effort in. It's just me putting a tiny little extra bit.
Speaking of Falling Skywards, that game had very nice, very smooth animations. And you had one animation in particular, which I believe is a record for you, isn't it?
It was. I think it was 76 frames, and it was a single piece of paper blowing. And I didn't... I painted each frame hand by hand. I wasn't even using keyframes or tween frames. I just kept painting. It was one of those incremental animations where I just keep painting until I knew it had got to the reference point.
Wow, that is very impressive.
It was... Well, it's really... I think even that is probably... And it's a waste of energy because there was... You know, there's other things you could be working on when you've got a time limit, but it looks nice, so...
Yeah. Now, that animation, did you just animate the paper flying? Or, I mean, did you just animate the paper itself fluttering? Or did you do, like, the giant, you know, the paper covers a lot of ground? What I'm asking is, did you move the paper in AGS or while it was animating? Or what did the animation consist of, the paper fluttering and moving around?
Oh no, it was usually for something like this, if I've got a falling leaf or something like that, I'll just animate an 8-frame cycle and then move the character in AGS. But in that case, I guess I was feeling excitable that day and I painted each frame. So the amount of ground it covers is exactly what I painted. Each frame is individual.
Okay, so that explains a little bit more why it was so many frames. 'Cause...
Oh, I would... if I did a cycle of 76 frames, then I'd be a madman.
Yeah,
or it would be pre-rendered in a program, you know.
I was
like an environmental effect.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering how you had managed to get 76 frames of a paper animating. I didn't know the paper could animate that much.
Well, I think I did it. I mean, it was so framey. It was a very framey animation that I think I did it at a delay of zero in AGS when I played the animation. It was very, it's probably over framing. I find sometimes, and this is something I've noticed, if I put too many frames in an animation, it looks too smooth and it doesn't fit the rest of the game.
Okay.
So that's something to be aware of. Now, before we move on from animation, we should talk about what programs we use. You use mainly Photoshop, is that right?
I do, yes. And I also wanted to give a... since you were giving a word of warning, I also wanted to give a brief word of warning. When you rotoscope your animations and you do your own animating, you stand in front of the camera and you act out your own animations, you should always take a bit of caution with what you're doing. Because if you're doing something, if you're doing something a bit physical or stunt-like, you want to make sure that you do it in a safe environment. Because just the other day, I was doing an animation. I was filming one of the final animations for Ben Jordan 8, which involves a character falling off the side of a railing, and
that's dangerous.
It is dangerous, and so I filmed myself falling backwards over the side of the railing, and didn't realize that instead of I went through great pains to make myself a little air mattress type thing. I put some pillows in garbage bags.
You're a professional amateur stuntman, in other words.
Hey man, I do all my own stunts. That's how I roll. And so
obviously, manly.
obviously, and but instead of falling backwards and onto the padding as I thought, I fell straight down and smashed my head on the wall in the process when I fell back. So yes, always be aware of what your animation is going to consist of, and don't do anything stupid. You can always cheat your way afterwards, which is what I ended up doing afterwards. So yes, go ahead.
I have to say, even though I don't rotoscope, I always, if I'm doing something I've never animated before, I always act it out, and I look at the various positions of my body to see how I need to make the sprite work, and it's involved me doing all sorts of strange things around the house. You know, I've run down hallways, I've stood on my chair and danced like a stripper, I've pretended to kiss the air for Dave Gilbert, I've done all sorts of weird, weird things, and I always think, man, I hope no one's peeking in the window or something watching me do this going, what is wrong with this man?
Well, I did the railing animation in the front on the front steps of my house, so anyone driving by would have been like, why is this guy doing this and why is he wearing a towel around his neck? Because rotoscope animation I just want to say rotoscope animation is very good for if you have like cloth or fabric or stuff waving around. It gives you a really nice effect.
Oh yeah, I animated a dress blowing in the breeze the other day, like a cycle, and I thought this would be so much easier if I actually had a reference. But anyway,
yeah.
Never mind.
Yes.
Yeah, you use Photoshop, that's right?
I do use Photoshop, yes.
Do you green screen or anything like that to make it easier?
No, I don't. I don't, actually. I mean, I guess it could be easier, but I don't really have too much of an issue separating the what I'm tracing over from the background. And I use pretty cluttered backgrounds because I just take pictures in my house and my house is messy. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's, I suppose if you're actually using the sprites themselves in the game, as some games did, I think Tex Murphy did that.
Yeah.
I suppose that would be different.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've never tried that before. It'd be an interesting experiment. Okay. Well, I've heard that Photoshop, people have told me that Photoshop is really terrible for animating, but I don't really, I mean, it doesn't let you go frame by frame to see how you're doing, but it's, I don't find it all that bad. It works for me. What do you use?
I've animated in Photoshop, and I'll just say I don't find it that bad, but I find everything takes twice as long to do. I started animating in MS Paint. Don't animate in MS Paint. It's not a good idea.
I didn't even think you could.
I've animated it. Well, it's just creating lots of different sprites on a sheet, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
And you put them side by side and you hope they line up. But these days I use GraphicScale It's a pixel art program. You can't paint in it, but it's for my needs. It's got everything I want. I mean, you can have, not only do you have separate frames that you can do it all with, each frame can have its own layers. So often what I'll do is I'll have different stuff from different layers if I'm doing lots of complex movements with anything. And even a walk cycle, I'll put the arms on a different layer to the legs and the body so that I can edit them. And if I get them wrong, I don't have to redraw entire sections of torso. Just makes it easier. I've tried ProMotion. A lot of people swear by ProMotion. It's not really my thing. It's just the interface is a lot more cluttered than in GraphicScale. It's like the simpler you can get it and yet still be effective with it, that's exactly what you want. So yeah, I've recommended a lot of people who are having trouble like getting animation to work. I'm like, try GraphicScale. It's free. There's a free version. And they try it and they go, oh wow, this is so much easier than what I was using, like Photoshop or whatever.
Oh. Well, gee, maybe I'll try GraphicScale someday, and I'll be one of those people. But probably not, because I hate
maybe. Well, you're a Luddite. That's what
I am a Luddite. And I'm so happy that you said that, because usually I always call people Luddites, and everyone's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you Philistine! And they're like, how do you... Then they'd say, what's a Philistine? And I say, what is wrong with you people? Didn't you go to school?
You're just... You're overly magniloquent. That's your issue, Grimslav.
I'm going to have to dumb down my vocabulary is what I'm going to have to do.
Yeah,
me no like technology.
I have to say, it's a little bit... You're a little bit of a hypocrite calling people Luddites when you make point-and-click adventures in 320 by 240 resolution.
True. But hey, and considering whatever. That I didn't... considering I didn't upgrade until to AGS 3.1 until, like... 6 months ago. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I know. Okay, so that does it for our discussion on the topic of animation.
It was an animated discussion. I'm sorry.
Right, so now we're gonna move on to a section of our podcast which we like to call Deliver Rants. Now basically
please tell us about Deliver Rants.
I will. Deliver Rants is a section of our podcast where two hillbillies talk about things that they hate in the AGS community or AGS games or adventure games in general.
Okay. Or what about the moon? Can we talk about things we hate on the moon?
Yeah, I guess.
I rant about moons.
If it gets to that point, yeah, we could probably do that. All right, so today's topic of discussion is fan games.
Well, go down it, Cletus. You know what I hate? I hate me some fan games. I don't like fan games.
I said, I see. Tell me. Why not?
Yeah, but see, my problem with fan games, Cletus, is that I think people should stick to their own original material, their own original IPs. People who make their Monkey Island games, well, then they're just not practicing their originality none, and it makes me sicker than Granny's moonshine.
I have to say, I've done a fan game, you've done a fan game. We've all worked on fan games. Everybody's guilty of it. We all make homages to our favorite games. It makes sense to come up with stuff within people's intellectual properties that you like, but I think it's more fun to make something original for yourself. I say, get off that fan game. Go make something nice for yourself, you know.
And now, to conclude our very first podcast, we're going to have a review of an old school game, starting with Ben 304.
Well, mine's actually a new school game, but that's fine. It's made in AGS, which makes it old school.
Oh, right, style. Of course. My apologies for not being more
We'll do an old school game and a new school game, but I'll start with a new school game called Metal Dead, which is a... Alright, so I recently played a game called Metal Dead. I picked it up as part of the bundle in the box, and I have to say, it is... I had a lot of fun with it. You were listening while I was playing it, Grimslav. You could hear me getting excited and laughing and all sorts of things.
I did, yes.
Yeah, it's a very comedy game. I mean, it reminded me a lot of the Ben and Dan games when I played it, but it's a lot more niche in its humor. It doesn't throw as many references to old adventure games. It stands by itself. It's a heavy metal adventure. It's got lots of references to heavy metal stuff, and it's got lots of fun zombie stuff in there. It's a very violent game. There's heads exploding and things, you know, limbs coming off on that. It made me laugh a lot with its gratuitous violence, but also it's got some clever puzzles. I never really got stuck very much. There was one little issue that annoyed me because I got stuck with it, but other than that, I have to say it was a really good fun game. I don't know how much they charge for it normally, but I didn't pay very much for it. Got it in the box. Absolutely worth how much I paid for it. I say you should all give it a try.
How many hours of gameplay did it give you, since that seems to be the big thing for people nowadays?
You know, I can't really remember. I played it in a couple of goes. It's not a long, long game. I guess I only got 2 or 3 hours out of it, but I was quite satisfied with it. It's probably as long as one of the Sam and Max episodes, I guess.
Oh, well, that's good. And, you know...
Now, you were going...
It was made by indies, so, you know, support your local indies.
Absolutely, an Australian indie.
Yeah, there you go.
Get into that.
Yeah. I'm going to review the school game, yes.
We segued well into the past. We've pre-segued it.
We have pre-segued when you mentioned about digging something up. I'm going to review LucasArts' classic, The Dig. Now,
can I just say, I just invented pre-segue just here today. So if anybody else does it, it was done here first.
Yeah, we're innovators. We are.
Yes, patents.
Yes, now The Dig. The Dig came out in, I believe, 1995, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember when it came out because I was very excited about it, and I had played a demo, and I went and I bought it, and I played it, and I liked it because it was 1995, and I was 13 years old and didn't know any better. And so, you know, a lot of people have called The Dig their least favorite LucasArts adventure game because it's really the only LucasArts adventure game that departs so much from their normal comedy formula, because, I mean, even Full Throttle was a bit of a departure in the sense that it was just like, yeah, I'm a man type thing. And
I kind of lump Full Throttle and The Dig in together, but I like Full Throttle more, and I think Full Throttle is still quite in line with the general LucasArts way of doing things.
Yeah, because it does have a sense of humor to it. The Dig is just melodrama.
It is very melodramatic.
So, yeah, and people don't like it also because of the puzzles and because it has some very mist-like, you know, machinery lever tweaking puzzles and things like that. But I replayed The Dig recently, and I don't have a problem with the puzzles. I don't have a problem with the game in general. But what really stuck out to me, which I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or because I've played more games and I've, you know, seen more and know more quality or something. I don't know if it's the dialogue, the voice acting, or both. But man, is the acting terrible and the dialogue cheesy. Oh my god. It was written by Orson Scott Card, who, as far as I know, is, you know, a famous science fiction author. And
absolutely. No, I think the only other game that he's worked on is Advent Rising. I think they're the two games. I could be wrong there, but as far as I know, that's it. Two games.
I think he also wrote the insults for Insult Sword Fighting in the first Monkey Island game.
Oh, you know what? You're absolutely right. I'd forgotten about that.
But in any case, just... Oh, my god. The voice acting is so horrible. I mean, it's like... You have these emotional scenes which are melodramatic enough with the dialogue, and it's just these monotone deliveries, and it's just, oh my. I know that, you know, the voice of the T-1000 is the main character, and he's alright, but the lady plays Maggie Robbins? Oh, she's terrible. She's just like, Boston, these death crystals, they are terrible. I am saying poignant
things. Oh man,
that... But it's just like, shut up!
That thing... Playing The Dig. I quite like the intro. If the game had continued as the game started off, I would have liked it. And I have to say, and I say this a lot, you know, the scene where you've got the water lapping at the shore and there's the big staircase leading up the cliff and everything like that. Do you remember that scene where the turtles found? That is one of the most beautiful low-res scenes ever made.
Absolutely. It's very pretty. It's very, very atmospheric, very nice, but just... It doesn't really mesh well with the terrible dialogue. But
well, that's a shame. They should have got Mark Hamill back.
Yeah.
Or was The Dig before Well, I forget. I was a child back then.
Yeah, I think they came out around the same time. But anyway, my point is, if you've never played The Dig, and you like LucasArts games, and you're willing to put up with a little bit of silliness, then you should definitely try it. But if you have played The Dig and you didn't like it, well, you're justified in your opinion. And if you played The Dig and you didn't like it, then, you know, you obviously like melodrama. So don't.
If you took the average of adventure games, I think that all the adventure games that were ever made, and you put The Dig on that list, I think The Dig would definitely be above the average. But compared to LucasArts, you know, the stuff that people like, when you expect something great.
It had very nice production values, but, you know.
Absolutely, it was lovely.
So, I think that wraps things up for this podcast.
Yes, it does. That's everything.
Yes, that's everything. So join us next time when we'll talk about something else and rant about something else. And if you have any feedback for us, you can contact us somehow. I know. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Grundislav Games, and you are?
I don't know, but it's got a Ben in it, and it's got a 3 or 4 in it, and I think there's an underscore in the middle.
Okay, that concludes this podcast. When will we be back? I don't even know. Should we promise?
I don't know, but if I will say this: if you don't listen to our next podcast after listening to this one, then you are a
loser.
All right, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.